Pir Gunamaya Bhavir, Ibi Savamidam Jagat, Mohitam, Nabi Zananti, Mam Avya Param Avyam. Krishna explains in chapter 7 that although he is beyond the three modes of material nature, no one sees him, no one sees him. Although he is there and he is transcendental to the modes of material nature, no one can know him. Mohitam Navi Jananti, because they are bewildered, deluded by the three modes of material nature. Mohitam Navi Jananti. No one can understand Krishna. So why, again, or how can, why can't someone understand due to the delusion of goodness, passion, ignorance? Why are we deluded by goodness and passion and ignorance? Because the root cause is Krishna, Anadiya Bahyamukh, that since time immemorial we have turned our back on Krishna, and practically speaking we wish to be imitation Krishnas. We wish to set up our own universe, our own reality in which we are the center, that we are the most important. And because of that basic illusion, we are put in the prison house, tied up by the three modes of material nature. So how to get free from those modes? The next verse, Daiviyesh Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratiya Mamevate Papadyante Mayam Itan Durantite. That one who surrenders unto Krishna, because these modes are working under him, they're his. They're his external energy, his Maya Shakti, because they are under him, under his control. If someone surrenders to Krishna, he can cross easily beyond these three modes of material nature. So naturally, we all become so eager to surrender to Krishna, to get free from the modes of material nature in which we enjoy so many, we travel from species of life, one species of life to another, eating and enjoying so many abominable things. According to the particular body that we have one taste for enjoyment or another. If we have our bird bodies, we like worms, and we think there is nothing better than a nice juicy worm to eat. And if we have a Vrindavan pig body, we all know what they like. They just like to put their nose in the garbage puddle and just eat and enjoy like anything. And if one has an elephant body, he likes eating little boys. So be careful. No, he likes eating grass and straw, and he thinks this is the nicest thing. A cow, of course, what do cows like to eat?
Sodom.
For Sodom. Okay. Which cows? This. Gosha. What kind of prasadam do they like this?
Puris.
Yeah?
Ice cream.
Yeah. And they like those ladus made of gore, yeah? They like gore very much. And they like straw. But you try to eat a big mouthful of straw, and you see if it agrees with the body that you're wearing. So according to the bodies that we have, we enjoy and suffer, and ultimately the body is meant for suffering, and ultimately the body is meant for death. So to get free from these three modes, which ultimately mean death, and then birth, and then death again, and then birth again, and then death again, we should get free. And how to do this? Mamevate prapadyante. One must surrender. So it's natural that everyone wants to surrender. But why don't some surrender? And the answer is in the next verse. Namam duskritino mudha. Because they are duskritinas. They are impious. And they are mudhas. They are donkey-like people. They just are interested in working. They are naradamas. They don't have faith in shastra. And they've given up their sadhana to enjoy themselves, because they are mayaya aprita jnanam. but they have studied, they have become great intellectuals, but they have not come to the conclusion of devotion. So therefore, all their study has, all their knowledge has been stolen away by Maya, Mayaya Aprita Gyan. And the fourth reason, the fourth type of duskriti, an impious soul who will not surrender to Krishna, is the one who has asura bhav. His very nature, his bhav, his very nature, his mood, is inimical to Krishna. He is asura, he is demon. He has a mood that is expressly inimical to Krishna. And sometimes when one goes on sankirtan, either chanting Hari Nam or book distribution like that, and you see so many people walking by, and some of them look very well dressed, and some of them are poorly dressed, some are beautiful, some are ugly, some are in between. But how they look externally cannot account for how they act. Some of them, someone you hand the book to, or you chant Hare Krishna, they think, oh, what a sweet sound this is. And another person, as soon as they hear the name of Krishna, they become so angry. Deep anger enters their heart. Has anyone had this experience? You can't tell who is going to react like that. But when someone hears Krishna's name, or gets offered a book about Krishna, if they have asura bhav, if they have deep envy of Krishna, it immediately will come out. And you see right before your eyes, practically, fangs growing from their mouth. Ah, you are crazy. One time I was wearing my dhoti and kurta and tilak, etc. And I was walking in New York. And this I was walking down Fifth Avenue or something like that. And this one French lady walked over to me. This was after there was the problems in Paris, in France, when the temple was closed. She walked over to me and she said, "We have finished you in France." It was so heavy. She wanted to kill me. Because I was a devotee. She wanted to finish me in New York after having finished me in France. A sort of bhav. These people are there. So those are the people who will never surrender to Krishna, no matter how much distress they're in, no matter how much wealth they have, no matter what, they will never surrender to Krishna because they are duskritina. And then on the other hand, what kinds of people do surrender to Krishna? Chatura vidhavajante mam jana sukritino arjuna. These four are sukritinas. They are pious souls. When they are in distress, they don't get angry at Krishna and hate him and become his enemy, but they surrender to him. These are sukritinas. They are artagigyasaradati and the jnani. They are those who in their piety, when they want wealth, they turn to Krishna. When they are in distress, they turn to Krishna. Who is the one in distress? What is the example of the one in distress?
Dhruva Maharaj.
Yes, and who is the curious? What is the example of the curious? Shonaka Rishi. And the fourth one, the jnani, Sukadeva Goswami. Sukadeva Goswami was, he immediately exacted a promise. He wouldn't come out of his mother's womb because he wasn't interested. He was in there for many, many, many years. And he wouldn't come out because he knew as soon as you come out, all the trouble begins. Because then everyone, oh, what a cute boy, and everything. And then you get entangled in family life and this and that. And he wasn't interested in any material entanglement. So he would not come out until Krishna himself came and promised him that, don't worry, you won't have any trouble. So then he came out and he immediately left home. And Vyasadeva wanted to teach him the Bhagavatam. But he was already liberated, so he had no interest in family life, he had no interest in the comforts of home, playing with his brothers and sisters, or this or that. So he just left home. But Vyasadeva wanted to bring him back, so he sent out a messenger with two verses from the Bhagavatam to trap Sukadeva Goswami. Because the question is asked in the Bhagavatam in the first canto, why did Sukadeva, who was already liberated, take the trouble to study this great literature in the Bhagavatam? Who knows what verse the answer is given in to that question?
Is it verse 3?
Verse 3, no? Now did you? It's Atmaramas Cha Munajo. That all different types of those, even the ones who are self-satisfied materialists, still they get great pleasure out of hearing the pastimes of Krishna. The granta dhirupane kovanti ahaitaki bhaktir itam guna bhuta guna hari. So, the verses, one verse that Vyasadeva sent out was Oho pakayam stanukala kutam jighamse aparayadapisvad vi lehegatim datri hitam jitonyam kam va dayalum sharanam vajema. Oho pakayam, who is the paki? Paki means the witch. This putana, this paki, this putana came to Krishna. Offering him her breast milk, but she had smeared poison on that breast milk. So she was coming to Krishna to kill him. But because she came in the mood, she was coming to Krishna in the dress of a nurse, of a beautiful woman who was offering something to Krishna. How did Krishna treat her? Well, someone came in disguise to kill you. Naturally we would be so angry and we would kill them, or we would put them in prison for thousands of years, or beat them. But what did Krishna do? He made her datri. He gave her the position of nurse in the spiritual world. So therefore, kam va dayalum sharanam brajema. Who could be more merciful and more worthy to surrender to than Krishna, who even when Putana came with the motive of killing him but was offering him a breast milk, he awarded her the position of datri, lebhe gatim datri. So who could be more worthy to surrender to and more merciful than Krishna? So when Sukadeva heard that verse, and the second verse is in the 10th canto, that verse I think is in the 3rd canto, it starts Bahar Pidam Karnakaram. It describes how Krishna is going to the forest with Balaram, and he's wearing earrings made out of the flowers, and he's playing his flute, and he's so beautiful, describing the beauty of Krishna. And that Oho Pakayam verse describes the mercy of Krishna. So when Sukadeva Goswami heard these two verses, one describing the beauty of Krishna, how gorgeous he is going to the forest, and the other verse describing how merciful he is, when Sukadeva heard those verses, he turned around and came back and wanted to hear more. That is how even a jnani becomes attracted to Krishna. So these are the four different types. Of course, Sukadeva was not an ordinary jnani. He was actually an eternal associate of Radha Krishna Lila, as Jiva Goswami describes in Gopal Champu. He was Srimati Radharani's own sukha, own parrot. And there's in Gopal Champu there's a story of how he came to this through Vyasadeva. We won't tell that now. So four kinds of pious men renders devotional service unto Krishna: the distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and the one searching for knowledge. So the next question is, out of those, who is best? Out of these, the one who is in full knowledge, the Jnani, and who is always engaged.
Did we read this one yesterday?
No.
No, okay. So the question is, who is best out of these four? And the answer is, Tesham Jnani Nitya Yukta. Out of them, one in knowledge, one in full knowledge, Jnani, and who is always engaged, Nitya Yukta. Eka Bhakti Vishishyate. Eka Bhakti means that he is only interested in pure devotional service. Eka, only in bhakti. This is his only interest. So he is very, very, very special, Krishna says. Priyo, he, jani no chartam. He, priya means very dear. So he is very dear to me. Very, very dear to me. This person in knowledge. And also, I am very dear to him. So the translation of these, the one who is in full knowledge, this isn't actually a Jnana Misra Bhakta, one who is desiring Jnana, worshipping Krishna, performing devotional service to Krishna, to get some Jnana. What is he interested in? This type of a Jnani. He is interested in devotion. He is interested only in making progress and attaining devotional service to Krishna. So this one, who is Eka Bhakta, who is interested only in bhakti, and who is in full knowledge and who is always engaged in pure devotional service, is the best. For I am very dear to him, and he is dear to me. There are other types of jnanis who are worshipping Krishna, but their interest isn't in Krishna, their interest is in merging in Brahman. So in sadhana, they worship Krishna, but in sadhya, they give up devotional service. But this type of a jnani is not like that. In sadhana and his siddha, he's still performing devotional service. He is interested in devotion. He's interested in serving Krishna. He is Eka Bhakta. He has no other desire except to please Krishna. That is the meaning of devotion. So these type of devotees, they love Krishna. And Krishna says that Mama Priya, they are very, very dear to me.
Did you call it Sajya?
What?
Sadhya.
Sadhya?
Yes.
Sadhya what?
When they are through with the sadhaka.
Sadhya means the goal. So in the siddha stage or the sadhya stage, they are interested in devotion. And their devotion is continuous, it's nitya seva, it is eternal, because they have no other interest in devotion. Then, the next question is, does that mean that the jnani is dear to you and no one else is dear to you? Because chatur vidha bhajante mam, and you said mama priya, they are so dear to me. Does that mean that the other three aren't dear to Krishna? Aren't dear? So Krishna says, udrasava ivaite, that all of these are certainly magnanimous. Udra means they are magnanimous souls. So all these devotees are undoubtedly magnanimous souls. But he who is situated in knowledge of me, I consider to be just like my own self. So the Mayavadis will interpret this to mean, aha, just see, Krishna says that one who has knowledge of me, he is like myself, he becomes me. He becomes one with me. But Krishna doesn't mean that they become one with him. He means that they are one in love, because the devotee, these type of devotees love Krishna, and they are one in desire, and Krishna loves them. So that there are two of them still, but they are one in love. So Krishna says, I consider them just to be like my own self. Being engaged in my transcendental service, he is sure to attain me, the highest and most perfect, the goal. Mam eva, anuttamam gatim. So the highest destination, which is me, mam, Krishna does this all the time. He says that I am the highest. Me, he says. And as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when he says, mameva te pavi, he points to himself sometimes, me. He's not pointing to the unborn, unmanifest, impersonal Brahman. He, the person. This is param gatim. Uttama gatim. This is the supreme destination to actually attain the lotus feet of Krishna and be one with him in loving devotional service. This is actually the highest. So, Krishna is explaining here that because of this glorious devotional service, these type of devotees, they were sure to attain me. So this means that they have not yet attained Krishna. But because of the purity of their activity, they will attain Krishna. Because they have no material desires. So here in this verse, it's interesting that he says, I consider them just like myself. Then there's some interesting quotes that from the Bhagavatam. There's one verse, I can't remember where it is, I believe it's in the 10th canto, where Krishna says, so these devotees, these jnani devotees, they're like Krishna's own self. And then when one becomes a pure devotee, I don't have the exact translation, but Krishna says, I consider them more dear to me than my own body. More dear to me than Lord Shiva, Balaram, Prajumna, or Rukmini Devi. So a pure devotee is even more dear to Krishna. Not like his own self, but more dear than his own self. And then the next quote is, but although the pure devotee is as dear to Krishna as his own self, his prema bhakta devotees, which is even above pure devotee, this is the gopis who are performing braja bhakti. There's another quote from the Bhagavatam where Krishna says, you gopis are even more dear to me than my own self. They actually are more dear to Krishna than his own self. So, Krishna has said here in 18 that how long will it take? I mean, that they will attain me. Then the next question is how long and how will they attain Krishna? Or especially how long? So the answer is bahunam janamamante janamam mam prapadyante vasudeva savamiti samahatma sadolabha. That after many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, in the beginning of spiritual realization, while one is trying to give up one's attachment to materialism, there is some leaning towards impersonalism. But when one is further advanced, he can understand that there are activities in the spiritual life, and that these activities constitute devotional service. Realizing this, he becomes attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrenders to him. At such a time, one can understand that Lord Sri Krishna's mercy is everything. And one who understands Vasudeva Savamiti, that there is nothing in existence except Krishna and his mercy, and that Krishna is the cause of all causes, and this material manifestation is not independent from him. That's what he realizes. Samahatma Sudhavada. Such a great soul is very rare. He realizes the material world to be a perverted reflection of spiritual variegatedness, and realizes that in everything there is a relationship with the Supreme Lord Krishna. Thus he thinks of everything in relationship, in relation to Vasudeva or Sri Krishna. Such a universal vision of Vasudev precipitates one's full surrender to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna as the highest goal. Such surrendered souls are very rare. So this Vasudev consciousness, Vasudeva Savami Iti, that there is nothing in existence other than Krishna, that means Krishna's energies. This is what we heard in the beginning of this chapter. So this knowledge that we heard, the different ways that we can see Krishna as the material energy, as the spiritual energy, prakriti aparyayam idam tvanam prakriti virime param jiva bhutamama vaho ye idam daryate jagat. That is the material energy, it's the spiritual energy, and then, and everything we see in existence is a combination of both, as the essence of everything, as being controlled by the three modes of material nature which are under Krishna's control. This is the way, what Krishna was giving instruction there is knowledge, how we can come to the platform of Vasudeva Savamiti, to see Vasudeva everywhere, and that precipitates or precedes or brings about full surrender to Krishna, that consciousness. Understanding that nothing exists except the mercy of Krishna, therefore I should surrender to Him, because He is so merciful. A whole pakiyam. Kamba dayalum sharanam vijayama. Who is more worthy to surrender to, who is more merciful than Krishna? So, how will such a person become elevated to prema bhakti? He's already clear in his consciousness. He has no material desires. Or another way of looking at it is, how do the Sakam devotees, which are the Sakam devotees that were mentioned, which are Sakam? This Jnani is Nishkam, which are the Sakam devotees? One, name one.
First you go to back to life.
Yes, but what does he have in addition to that desire? Why we call him Sakam?
He has material desires.
What is one kind of Sakam devotee?
The Artha.
Yes. That means?
That means one who has the stress.
Yes. And the second one of the Sakam devotees? And that means? Yes. And in between? Because you have to come to this platform. The what? Yes, Jigyasa. So how long will it take before these devotees come to the Jnani platform where they will make quick advancement? That's one way to look at this verse. It will take many, many births. Bahunam dharmamante. Because they have to get their material desires fulfilled. They have to become purified of material desires. That takes time. So what is it that makes the difference? Either to bring the Sakam devotees to the Nishkam platform, or the Jnani Nishkam devotee to the Prema platform. What is it? It's the association of a Prema Bhakti. This is it. This is what works. And especially the Nishkam devotee, because his heart is clean, like a mirror. As soon as he comes in contact with an exalted devotee, Prema Bhakti devotee, because his heart is clean, he immediately catches the reflections from his moon-like heart in his own heart. And very quickly, he becomes exalted himself. And without that association, no one can become an Uttama Bhakta. No one. This is the key, always association. Now, so these, Chatur Vidabhijante Mam, and the last three verses describe the Jnani and why their jnanis are exalted, and why they're and why they make progress, they surrender to Krishna, and also the Sakam devotees surrender to Krishna. But that, now the next question is, what happens to those who surrender? They surrender, but they don't surrender to Krishna. Now there's two types of these people who surrender but not to Krishna. They will be described one after another. We'll hear about one of them right now. Kamas taistar vritagyana prapadyante. Prapadyante means they surrender. But to who? Anya devata. They surrender to devatas or the demigods. Tam tam niyamam astava prakritya niyatas faya. Those whose intelligence, so this is how Krishna has described them, those whose intelligence has been stolen by material desires surrender unto demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own nature. So these people who surrender unto demigods, they are not sukritinas, but another word is used for them. They are called vritagyana. Kamas taistar vritagyana. Vritagyana means what?
Twisted intelligence.
Twisted intelligence, deprived. Means they have no intelligence, practically speaking, or little intelligence. Little intelligence, we'll call them. So because they are worshipping, they're performing austerities, they're doing worship. The bhakta worships Krishna, he surrenders to Krishna. And these ritagyanawalas, they are also worshipping and they are also surrendering. But they're surrendering to demigods, and therefore they're considered less intelligent. They're following rules and regulations. But how unfortunate they are, because they are not following the rules and regulations that will exalt them to the platform of bhakti. They are controlled by the modes of material nature. They don't get out of the modes. So it's interesting to note that there's Chaturvidha Bhajante Mam Jana Sukritino Arjuna Artha Gigyasa Arthati. There is someone who's in distress, so he worships Krishna to get out of distress. There's someone in distress. He wants wealth, he worships Krishna to get wealth. There's someone who's inquisitive, he worships Krishna. But these people, when they have similar desires, but because they're ritagyana instead of sukritinas, they surrender to demigods. So just, they have the same desires. Quite interesting. Because they think that Krishna is not going to satisfy their desires. Even this was also explained Yeyatam Mam Prapadyante right after that. Fourth chapter. That Krishna will reciprocate with you according to your desire. Akama sava kama va moksha kama udara. Tivrena bhakti yogeni ajeta purushasara. We should always worship Krishna, but these people think that Krishna will not satisfy their material desires. Why? Is because Krishna is very clever. Sometimes he won't satisfy the material desires of a devotee. He'll take away everything and send them out into the street penniless as a beggar, and he won't have anywhere to turn except to Krishna. Krishna is known to do those things. There's a story about Maharaj Yudhisthira who went to Krishna. Of course, Maharaj Yudhisthira is an eternal associate of Krishna. He has no material desires. He went to Krishna and he begged from Krishna, "Krishna, I have something. Will you grant it for me?" "Yes, whatever you like." "Of course, whatever you like." So Maharaj Yudhisthira said, "Okay, this is what I want. I want the richest kingdom in the world. I want the greatest army in the world. I want unbelievable opulence. I want to be able to defeat all my enemies." People who are listening to this were amazed. Maharaj Yudhisthira is asking for this sounding like a materialist, just asking for these material rewards? How is that possible? And then Maharaj Yudhisthira explained, because of course Krishna said yes immediately. And then Maharaj Yudhisthira explained, because people think that if they worship you, they will become poor and beggars. And I want to show them that they should worship you, that everyone should worship you. People are afraid to worship you. Rather, they will worship Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva is Asutosh. He easily is pleased. But you demand purification from the heart. And you take a long time to fulfill the desires, like Dhruva Maharaj. So I want to show people that even if they have material desires, they should just worship you. Just see my kingdom, see my wealth, see my family. So this is the tendency though. The tendency of someone who is less intelligent. Quickly, of course, men who are less intelligent worship the demigods because the demigods fulfill their desires quickly. That's in text 12. Men in this world, of the fourth chapter, men in this world desire success in fruitive activities and therefore they worship the demigods. Quickly, of course, men get results from fruitive work in this world. And then the last verse we'll read, or maybe we'll read the next one too. I am in everyone's heart as the Supersoul. This is 21. And as soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his faith steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity. Endowed with such a faith, he endeavors to worship a particular demigod and attain his desires. But in actuality, these benefits are bestowed by me alone. How peculiar it is that they have the same desires as devotees. And it is Krishna who will give them the fruits. When the devotee worships Krishna for Artha Gigyasa Artha Ti, Krishna awards them the fruits. And for the worshippers of the demigods, Krishna will award the fruits too. It is Krishna who bestows the fruits. And not only that, it is Krishna who bestows the faith that allows them to worship the demigods. Because without faith, one cannot perform the rules and regulations to worship properly. So Krishna gives the faith, he gives the intelligence, he gives the ability, and he gives the fruits. But yet, they are less intelligent. Because they are not worshipping Krishna directly, they are worshipping Krishna indirectly. And in the next verse, this point is explained a little more, but we'll stop here. Any questions? Or comments? Okay, we'll start this way and move around. Yeah.
You said that this jnani is not jnani Mishra Bhakta? He's not a jnani Mishra Bhakta?
He is free. He's like the Nishkam Karmi. He is free from the desire even for jnana. He wants devotion.
So he's a Shuddha Bhakta?
Not yet. He wants devotion.
He's beyond
something. In other words, his desire for jnana is subordinate to his desire for devotion. But he still maybe desires some jnana, but it's subordinate to his desire for devotion. So you could say he's jnana mistra. But he wants devotion, but he wants jnana. It's not that he wants jnana more than devotion. That's my understanding.
One of the final question was, this shloka, number 20, is that describing a karma khandi?
Yes, exactly. He's worshipping the demigods according to the rules and regulations. That's niyama astaya. He's worshipping according to the rules and regulations. So he's following the Vedas, but he's still a fool. He's Vritagyan.
According to his denomination, Vritagyana, it's almost like Mayaya Parikosana.
No, well, there's similes, it sounds like, but there's completely different. Mayaya aprita jnana means one whose knowledge has been stolen by illusion, and this one is ritta. Ritta means deprived of jnana. So it sounds similar, but the Sanskrit. Huh? He's also an illusion?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, he is very... Yes, I think you're actually right. He is... If someone who is studying the Vedas but doesn't come to the conclusion... But there is... See, there's actually a subtle difference, but it doesn't come out here. The subtle difference is one has knowledge of devotion, Maya Pitigyan, but it is stolen away by illusion, and maybe he's worshipping the demigods, and maybe he's studying the Vedas, but he has knowledge, but it's stolen away by illusion. But this Rittagyan, he doesn't have knowledge. That's actually the difference.
I wasn't necessarily looking at the Rittagyan more like the Indian people who know that Krishna exists, know that if you worship Krishna, you may lose your material desires, but because they won't enjoy it, they don't worship Krishna. They worship the demigods to satisfy their desires. And the other one, my point again, I was in the same, more like a scientist, a scientific knowledge, well, you know, people are just in search of materialistic knowledge in order to fulfill their material desires.
I mean, you can understand it like that, but you could... But probably it's literally more correct to understand it the way I explained it. This is really those who have no intelligence. Less intelligent people who have lost their spiritual sense take shelter of demigods for immediate fulfillment of material desires. Generally, such people do not go to the Supreme Personality of Godhead because they are in the lower modes of nature, ignorance and passion, and therefore they worship demigods. Following the rules and regulations of worship, they are satisfied.
In text 18 it says that young Vishnu Bhakti is sure to attain me. And then in verse 19, Lord Krishna says that it takes many, many births.
Yes.
Why is it that the Lord has been waiting so long to meet a pure devotee?
If he meets a pure devotee quickly, then there's no, then he'll immediately go ahead. There's different ways of explaining this verse. One is, it's the many, many births for the ones with the material desires to come to the other platform, to the jnana platform. But if one doesn't, this can also just emphasize the importance of the pure devotee. It's just a glorification of the importance of that association. That even if someone is on that platform of having no material desires, he still cannot attain pure devotional service unless he attains the dust of the lotus feet of the pure devotee. So that emphasizes, when looked at that way, it emphasizes that point.
But in that case, the Lord will arrange.
That's up to him, of course. But if someone desires that, see, there's different types of desires too. Someone may be free from all material desires and want devotion, but he may not want Braja Bhakti, for instance. So that may take even a longer time before Krishna decides to award that. That especially is Sudolava. Other questions?
It seems like even the worship of demigods is quite common in society.
It's common in Vedic society.
Like even with many worship of demigods, desires are different. So it's not like the process of
worship. We already discussed this in the third chapter. Why is it encouraged to worship the demigods to get one's material desires fulfilled? Yes, I am asking, but I'm asking those who want to answer to raise their hands. Sarvam.
That's the story of the scriptures and the priests and the gradual.
Yeah, it's the step-by-step gradual process. But it's still for Ritta-jnana people. Because if they understand that the demigods are getting their potency from Krishna, why not worship the source of their potency? Does that answer your question?
Well, I was thinking maybe Krishna himself is a smaller
Well, even yeah, but how to worship them is the point. You worship them as Krishna, as parts of Krishna's universal form. This is also described in the second canto of the Bhagavatam. But it's a way of, if you worship the demigods as a way of worshiping Krishna, like Bharat Maharaj did, then you're worshiping Krishna, not the demigods. But you're worshiping Krishna through his universal body. And that is exalted, but it's also not necessary. Any other questions or comments? You had a question before, it's been dissipated.
Well, you kind of answered it already, but maybe you can make it
maybe.
So this Ritta-jnana, yes. He's neither Duskriti nor Sukriti.
Right. Actually, in the actual literal way of translating it, the Duskritinas have knowledge and they give it up. It is stolen away by either their material desires, their lack of faith, or they're just their asura bhava. Those are the Duskritinas. And these people don't have their Ritta-jnana.
They follow authority.
They follow authority, but they misfollow. They follow it improperly, actually. Did you have one more question?
Yeah. Well, I'll just ask you. In verse 19, it said, Vasudeva Savam Niti Samad Nasudurava. So I was wondering, is there a reason? Maybe there isn't. Was there a reason that Krishna is addressed as Vasudeva in this shloka? Instead of saying Krishna Savam Niti, but Vasudeva.
Because that's Krishna's all pervading feature, is known as his Vasudeva feature.
So it doesn't refer to Vasudeva Krishna in the sense that Krishna is outside of Vrindavan?
Yeah, in that sense, it does. That's Krishna's Vasudeva feature. Krishna himself never takes a step outside of Vrindavan. So how does he do that through his Vasudeva feature?
So is that Vasudeva feature forearm or two arms? Forearm.
Or if he wants, it can be two arms. He can do as he likes, or 10 arms, or 1,000 arms.
Krishna and Radha, that's Vasudeva?
Well, there's Aniruddha Pradyumna, Vasudeva, and Shankarsana. And some of them are in one. There's different features. Krishna kills the demons through his Vasudeva features, alright? I don't know exactly, it's a little technically beyond that, I guess. Okay, that's all for tonight. Hare Krishna.